Governor Roy Cooper has declared a state of emergency as North Carolina braces for the remnants of Hurricane Ian, likely to begin hitting the state sometime today. The state emergency response team is set to activate later today, with plans to shift to 24-hour operations tomorrow morning. Parts of the coast are already under tropical storm watches and warnings in North Carolina, though the latest track shows the center of the storm heading further inland towards the mountains. We're joined on the phone now by meteorologist Tom Green from the National Weather Service in Raleigh. Tom, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
You're welcome.
So when it comes to Hurricane Ian in the Triangle, what can we expect to see and when can we expect to see it?
Well, we're expecting to see the rain end up moving in probably late tonight, but more likely during the morning hours on Friday. We're expecting that the heaviest rainfall will likely end up occurring Friday afternoon and Friday evening, with the rain starting to lighten up a bit overnight as we go late into Friday night and into the day on Saturday.
How long do we expect it to last in general?
The bulk of the rain should end up coming to an end by later on Saturday, although the leftover circulation will still end up keeping some rain around Saturday night, Sunday, and Sunday night, although much lighter than what we're expecting on Friday and Friday night.
What are we looking at in terms of total accumulation?
It is likely to be several inches of rain, specifically for the Triangle. We're looking probably in the ballpark of 3 to 5 inches of rain with some local higher amounts.
How about wind gusts? What can we expect to see there?
When it comes to the winds, when we end up taking a look at those, let's see, we're expecting winds to ramp up to about 30 to 35 miles an hour during the day on Friday. Then things should end up trailing off for Friday night, and we expect that the wind gusts with the actual circulation of Ian itself to end up remaining a bit to the west of the Triangle as it moves into the state Friday night into Saturday.
Speaking with Tom Green, National Weather Service. So with that in mind, statewide, where is the biggest impact going to be and what are we looking at there?
Probably the strongest winds will probably end up being somewhere around the Charlotte area or maybe just a touch east and then moving into the Triad, and that would end up being late Friday night into Saturday morning.
And then finally, as we wrap up this conversation for us here in Orange County, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and the Triangle in general, what would you say is the thing that we should be most worried about, if anything, with this storm? And what would be your advice for folks who are getting ready for it?
I think the greatest threat will likely end up being from the rainfall that we end up having. Although we have been dry over the last weeks and months, we still are expecting, kind of with any tropical cyclone, any tropical storm, that you could end up having some pretty strong rain rates. So we will have the potential that there could be some flash flooding. So I would say that that is the greatest threat, although we will still end up having the possibility that some trees could end up coming down with wet ground and those winds in the 30 to 40 mile an hour range.
Again, Tom Green, National Weather Service, thank you so much for being with us today, and stay safe yourself through this.
You're welcome.
And again, we'll keep you posted on updates here on 97.9 The Hill throughout the storm. Again, expected to begin really tomorrow is when the rain is likely to fall early in the morning and then throughout the day into the weekend. But the heaviest stuff and the majority of the rain is going to fall during the day on Friday. So plan accordingly for that. On campus, UNC crews will be deploying sandbags outside some university buildings to limit any possible flooding. Governor Cooper is going to be holding a press conference at 3 o'clock today, and stay with us here on 97.9 The Hill throughout the day for continued updates. Other news and update on Tuesday's fatal shooting at University Gardens. Police have now identified the victim, 51-year-old Michael Lee. Three other individuals were also injured, two of whom required hospitalization, but police say all three of those are expected to survive. Police say there's no ongoing threat to the community, but they are still looking for a suspect. Call 911 or contact the Chapel Hill PD if you have any information. Over to UNC now, where officials announced on Monday that lead contamination had been found in drinking fountains in two more campus buildings, Carrington Hall and Taylor Hall. As the number of affected buildings increases, what is the situation currently like on campus? Sophie Mallinson has more on that for Carolina Connection.
As students make their way into Wilson Library's main study room, they pass by two historical water fountains. Taped to each fountain is a sign, out of order, do not use, in all caps. On September 1st, the Office of Environment, Health, and Safety, or EHS, sent out an email to the UNC community saying that three of Wilson Library's public water fountains had detectable levels of lead.
Yeah, you know, when I first read the email, I didn't feel surprised.
Erin Siegel McIntyre is a UNC journalism professor in Carroll Hall. She first moved to Chapel Hill from Tijuana, Mexico, in 2020, and she described bringing with her a tradition of carrying around garrafones, or large water jugs, instead of relying on the water in a building.
But after a while, I got tired. I would have a little wagon that I would use to, you know, pull my water into Carroll Hall. And I thought, okay, Erin, like, this is overkill. This is silly. Everyone else is using the water fountain. And so I did start using it about a year ago.
But after the lead findings at Wilson Library,
I am no longer drinking water from Carroll Hall. You always gotta trust your instincts. Like, something when I got here to Carolina said, like, just bring your own water.
While EHS has not released any information about lead in Carroll Hall, Wilson Library's fountains were just the beginning of the findings. The Orange County Water and Sewer Authority says they have no lead service lines. So as for the cause of the lead in the water, Executive Director of EHS, Catherine Brennan, says,
we do think it's probably the fixtures that are causing the issue. Some older fixtures, they might have used lead solder to weld components together back when they were produced. And so over time, what happens with the corrosivity of the water, it can start to leach the lead off of that solder.
The Safe Drinking Water Act largely banned lead components from being used in water systems in 1986, but many of the university's buildings predate that.
We're actually doing a comprehensive review of the make, model, and age of the water fountains to identify, you know, do we have older fountains, and then we can prioritize testing other areas for that reason.
The university investigation, which was prompted after a summer research group did water testing across campus, found many of the contaminated fixtures had lead levels exceeding 15 parts per billion. This is what the EPA lists as the lead action level, which requires the EHS to try to reduce the water's lead concentration. While no amount of lead in water is considered a good thing, EPA action levels are set more with children in mind, as lead exposure at a young age is much more damaging, according to Ed Norman from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services.
But even for adults, I mean, high levels of lead, they can affect, you know, blood pressure. All sorts of chronic conditions are affected by lead.
With severe exposures, Norman described how lead can accumulate in the bone, causing things like limited wrist mobility. And the EPA says consuming lead can cause reproductive and kidney problems. Norman says there's no magic number in terms of how long it takes to see health effects. It can take years, and it really depends on how chronic the lead exposure is. Some of UNC's water fixtures were around or under lead levels of 15 parts per billion. Norman says people who use these fountains irregularly don't have much to worry about. However, one of Wilson Library's second-floor fountains had a measurement of at least 185 parts per billion.
Certainly the employees who use that second-floor fountain, well, that's of concern. That would be a situation where they might want to consider having themselves tested.
Some of the more recently announced buildings have water fixtures with even higher lead levels, like one in Fordham Hall that had a second test result of 662 parts per billion, despite having non-detectable levels the first time it was tested. That's 44 times more than the EPA's lead action level. Brennan emphasized that the latest lead updates will be posted to the EHS website. And with every water sample taking up to a week to get test results, she expects the lead investigation to take a month. In Chapel Hill, I'm Sophie Mallinson.
For Carolina Connection, a student-produced radio newscast from the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media that airs on Saturday mornings at 8:30 right here on 97.9 The Hill. State-level news, COVID-19 numbers continue to head in the right direction with new data out from the State Health Department. COVID hospitalizations dropped below 1,000 for the first time since July, and COVID particles found in wastewater dipped to their lowest level since April. Health officials are still urging everyone to keep taking basic precautions. Stay home if you're sick, mask up in crowded indoor spaces, and of course, stay up to date on your COVID vaccine. Also in Raleigh, a new report from the state auditor says North Carolina's unemployment office has made too many improper payments in recent years. The audit covered the years 2016 to 2021, finding $384 million in improper payments out of $2.2 billion in all. That's well over the 10% threshold that's considered acceptable by federal standards. Officials with the unemployment office say the percentage of improper payments has gone down since last year. And back locally, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen made a stop in Chapel Hill on Tuesday, part of a month-long national tour to raise awareness of the long-term negative economic impacts of climate change. Ahead of the midterms, Yellen's touting the benefits of the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act, which will spend $375 billion on climate mitigation efforts over the next 10 years. 6:21, your time. Time now for a full look at sports, brought to you this hour by Chapel Hill Tire. Hurricane Ian may be heading our way, but all systems are go for the two big events on campus this weekend. We've got live action with Carolina basketball at the Smith Center tomorrow night. And, of course, UNC football taking on Virginia Tech at Keenan Stadium on Saturday. Carolina has faced the Hokies in hurricane weather before. Back in 2016 during Hurricane Matthew, that game did not end well for the Tar Heels. They fell at home 34-3, looking for a different result this time around. Live action, by the way, is not the only exciting news for Tar Heel basketball fans this week. Inside Carolina reports another May brother, junior Bo May, will be joining the Tar Heels as a walk-on this season. And the schedule is now out for ACC games this year with dates and times and TV designations. UNC's conference slate begins early with a road game at Virginia Tech on Sunday, December 4th, followed by a home game against Georgia Tech on Saturday, December 10th. Get the full schedule online at GoHeels.com. Men's and women's basketball. A handful of dates and times still remain to be determined. Elsewhere in sports, congrats to UNC field hockey up to number one in this week's national coaches poll after knocking off Wake Forest 2-0 last week. Erin Mattson had both goals in that win, and for that effort, she was named ACC Offensive Player of the Week. Finally, in baseball, the Durham Bulls wrapped up their regular season yesterday with their fifth straight win, 9-5 over Charlotte. With an 86-64 record, the Bulls took the International League East title by 3.5 games over Scranton. Now they head to Vegas for the AAA playoffs. First up on Saturday, a one-game playoff against West Division champ Nashville for the International League title. Then if they win, another one-game playoff the next day against the Pacific Coast League champion, whoever that should be, for the AAA and National Championship. This will be the first AAA title game in 3 years since before the pandemic. The Bulls last won the title in 2017.